Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, 5 minutes past the hour of 4. And as usual, we're here until the hour of 6, your drive time show, as usual, Monday to Friday.
Yeah. And we've got a, okay, it's not a novel discussion. It's a discussion you have probably have seen already in our e-paper.
Yeah.
Just that you know, dear listeners, but it does sneak its head back, Helmut. One time in a year when we do the home run, while we do the home run, mm-hmm. This topic always comes back, and it's a discussion, obviously, that always still has much particular value, because we are now obviously looking at the, should I call it the War of Hormuz for now? Or the Battle of Hormuz, or the Conflict of Hormuz.
I'm beginning to think we should just leave Hormuz out of this whole. This is a whole Trump thing.
So what should we call it? Trump's Crusade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's Trump's Crusade currently happening there in the Strait of Hormuz. With the latest updates, because we are introducing this to your listeners so that you understand that our discussion is based upon Namibia's potential diversification. I say potential because we had the UNCTAD report, Helmut, that speaks about diversification from just being purely exporting, unprocessed goods and services, or unprocessed goods, let me rather say, they're not services.
Yeah.
However, it was also contained that the diversification takes place on top of the extraction sector. So meaning it's diversification, enhancement, further installations, and further, installation of sectors on top of the extractive sector. Here, our recent trade statistics and trade data from, this was the month of February primarily, which comes from the Namibia Statistics Agency, is a discussion of, will Namibia ever try to change the image of being a net importer? And even with the recent discussion, I went interestingly looked up, what is the latest trade data between Namibia and Europe as well? Because the EU loves championing that they are becoming Namibia's biggest trade partner. And when you go look at it, Hamid, it's more like a lot of but it's a variety of products and goods.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everything from industrial machinery and equipment to like everyday consumption or consumer products, ne? Get imported into Namibia. And the platform that I accessed, which is that statistics, it sort of like aggregates the stats from the UN Comstrade statistics platform, which now is no longer for free. I don't know what happened.
Money happened, obviously.
I now can't access UN Comstrade.
So it's... it was open, but now it's behind a paywall.
Well, it's not an actual paywall. It's like a weird login situation, but it means that you need some sort of credentials, some level of credentials. And I was like, since when did this happen? Because UN Comstrade was for free for the whole world. Okay, that thing moves on. And now we sit with a weird scenario of, when will Namibia be able to change its net importer status?
Mm-hmm.
When will we reach the promised land of also giving what was Trump's particular crusade of 2025, change the trade surplus discussion or change the trade deficit discussion? Because if you identify as deficit on the one side, there's a surplus on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So when will Namibia also change its particular trade deficit / trade surplus relationship with its most desired or its preferred trading partners across the world? The EU, as a collective, looks like the biggest. But if you break up the EU, because that's what we all do, you look at individual nations, then South Africa and China are number one and number two. Yeah. They always rotate between each other. So we sit with a scenario. We obviously have a nuanced view because it's what that is being imported versus how much. How much obviously also factors into a great deal the discussion, but you got to look into what are the nuances, what are the individual, what are these categories? Is it fish? Is it canned meat? Is it cosmetics? XYZs, you know, and then you link it to the ABCs at the end or the start of the discussion, which means ABCs have to come first before you get to XYZ. So yeah, just to outline that particular intro.
All right. Thanks, man.
I had to breathe somewhere, dude.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Look, I have one thing. I have 2 points, actually 3 points I have to make. Yeah. One, I like these documents coming from, you know, just that's based on what's taking place in the country and the, you know, statistics report or this now, you know, this is not a report. It's a trade statistics bulletin. February 2026.
They are reporting.
Borrow words from thin air. Now that you have classified it as
such. Same thing like you did with the policy where you were like, that's the report.
Yeah. I just don't want to, you know, mix up the terminologies.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing. If you look at the preface of the CEO, and just go to the third last paragraph. The third last paragraph. And it's this is a very nice report, but I find it a little boring because no one is shooting themselves in the in the foot. But the thing is,
it's an oversight committee.
I get that, but look, it's indicating a lot of good things in a lot of somewhat complicated way for those of us that don't speak numbers.
Yeah.
But the good thing is it has paragraphs that you can just go through and sort of like compare and contrast between import and export of different products, they are also looking at different ministries and how basically they performed, and it turns out mining is still dominating the extractive industry.
Yep.
And followed by fishing,
which is extractive.
That's the interesting part,
because no one grows the fish grows there by itself, Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
No one is growing the fish, so
yeah.
It is a mining extractive, like forestry, which is also extractive.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we will always have extractive leading the way.
The third last paragraph is just hidden somewhere in between. There's a part that says, fish was the only non-mineral product.
True.
Yeah, non-mineral, but it can easily fall under the category of the extractive industry. Yeah. The CEO here points out that fish was the only non-mineral product among the top 5 exports. And non-mineral, fish, is just there. And when you go to page 4, second paragraph, that's my favorite. Regarding the sectoral share of total exports for February 2026, so manufacturing sector occupying the first position with the largest export value of 4.9 billion, contributing 73.5% share to the country's total export revenue. A month on month, a composition showed a decrease of up to 15 million in exports of products from this sector. Mm. That's, we are still in that manufacturing.
Yeah.
There was a decrease. But that's something I have to say that I didn't expect to see. Manufacturing, I was like, yep. But the question is, what are we manufacturing?
Well, once again, it shows the basic metals. And then food and products, or food products, which is good. I mean,
yeah.
But these are the main exports.
Okay, that's where, again, I'm back to technicalities.
Shouldn't there be a difference between processing and manufacturing? Because, I mean, it's not like you can manufacture food.
Well,
you can process food.
Well, here's a nice thing, Hamut, that happens sometimes. Because the processing, after it being taken out of the ground or out of the sea, the processing after that counts as value addition.
It does.
Whether you just rinsed it with water,
yeah.
And my hands were there just rubbing the soil off of the mineral or whatever.
Yeah, just massaging the poor dead fish.
Or even the potato, you know, massaging the potato or the carrot. That is value addition.
Yeah.
Because who then cleaned the soil off of the thing, and who brought the water bucket with the hose pipe or whatever close to rinsing off whatever you extracted from the ground?
Yeah.
Then putting it into cold storage or putting it on an 18-wheeler container truck to transport it to another place for processing is also processing. Because you're changing a state. You're changing, you're altering, you're going to add more value and invest more, what you call it, steps of something into the original state of the product.
Yeah.
So if the potato is then going to be peeled and cut into smaller pieces to become your favorite McCain's frozen potato chips, which you buy at the end of the month from your local retailer, that's the process we're going to look forward to. Or if the copper nugget is going to then be washed further, because it was already washed here when it was taken, after it was taken out of the ground, or let's say it is just being transported to the smelter, so that's the value addition, the transportation. And it's going to be washed and smelted into a different state at the smelter. Yes, that's what's going to happen as well.
Yeah.
So the processing, Helmut, is part of value addition, even the transportation.
So you throw it under the category of manufacturing.
Yep. Because it's a level just above the actual extraction. Because the actual extraction is you now having 20. Namibians, let's not debate whether they passed grade 12 or not. Let's not debate that part.
Let's not open that can of worms.
Because those 20 Namibians would then be paid their minimum wage as a mine worker.
Yeah.
And they will have their particular perks and you know, associated benefits to their contracts. And those 20 Namibians you are sending below ground to go and chop up the ground and excavate, and then find the mineral ore. So that is just entirely extraction. It's similar to like what happened with you, Helmut. When you were younger, you had to go and look after the 50 cattle.
Oh, yeah.
While you were a three-year-old boy.
Ish.
You know, and it's, in many cases, that hyena looked like a massive dog for some reason. But that's what you did.
It's a good thing I never ran into those guys because what's that word? Nocturnal.
Mm.
Yeah, you hardly run into them.
Yeah.
During the day. Elephants, on the other hand, easy to run into them during the day, but they're mostly just, just chilling. Just
and they keep to themselves, except for the elephant bulls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which are very territorial. So, we are seeing some processes coming about, Hamut. We are seeing certain value additions exercises being implemented. However, these latest trade statistics, which are obviously based off February's activities, they paint a different picture because you now can see things are heating up. And when I say things are heating up, we've got to refer back to Trump's crusade on the Strait of Hormuz.
Now, before we go there, the reason why I pointed out this manufacturing part and why I find it thrilling to read on is I'm looking at this and going, Kurenkuru,
Or the t-shirt, either the garment.
Yeah, factory. The garment factory and the tannery in Ondango,
do something.
Someone Lazarus them.
Yeah.
And bring them back to life and, top up this already interesting, manufacturing revenue generation that we are basically beginning to see.
Yeah. No, those are valid points, Albert, because what they would have done would have been a scenario of, they would have factored into, because the first idea usually is, do you have local supply contracts? So yeah. The garment factory was then supposed to supply local supply contracts. And then if you meet local supply demand, or you meet local demand through your supply from the garment factory, and the tannery itself, you meet local supply, and then you start looking at, can't we then send leather products somewhere? Or can't we send finished t-shirts, shirts, trousers, all those other garments somewhere? Who in Southern Africa would like to buy local garments? Because that's what we're currently experiencing, Hamoud, with South Africa.
Yeah.
Because the moment you go to... Okay, so these are the exports, that page 4 that you highlighted. That was the exports table that you highlighted. But when you go and look at the import table, the next one on the next page, on page 5.
Yeah.
Just look at... Okay, you've got machinery and equipment. The number one imported goods.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got chemicals and chemical products. So those first two, you can immediately say that's for the extractive industry.
Yeah,
that's got nothing to do with your belly politics. You being hungry, you being clothed or needing to be clothed.
Yeah,
nothing to do with that. However, when you look at the last product, the last category in that in that manufacturing landscape. It's food products.
Yeah, manufacturer of food products.
And they are this close to the first two. 1.1 billion for food products versus 1.1 billion versus 1.18 for chemicals and chemical products.
Yeah.
Or 1.22 billion for machinery and equipment. Now, you won't see machinery and equipment and chemicals and chemical products persisting for every month. You won't see it because it fluctuates. Usually it comes to...
So it's not always topping the chart.
It's not always topping the chart, the specific product category.
Yeah.
And when you get... And remember, that's manufacturing. So that's secondary industries above the extraction. But when you get, for example, to... the last category of agriculture, forestry and fishing, you've got crop and animal production, and then you've got hunting and related service activities. So hunting and related service activities is a bit of a broad category or subcategory of that category, because crop and animal production, which potentially would imply 237 million worth of it, would imply to you that, okay, so this is a discussion of varying degrees of crop products or animal products coming in to assist in crop production or in animal husbandry production. Or because definitely there's not a, no one is buying a lot of hunting related, hunting production services that heavy. So you could put it in the first two, animal and crop. So this means either seeds came in or, you know, various kinds of medical, or you know, what you call it, veterinary products came in to assist with animal husbandry. Those particular imports would feature. And once again, the overlaying or the overlying description that we're seeing from the import, the top import indicators here, is that it's everything to do with the extractive sector. This is manufacturing based on mining. One. Manufacturing based on agriculture, still sector one. Mining and actual mining and quarrying has its own particular feature. Because they, I think they brought in the most. The first one was mining support services, which brought in 2 billion. That was 2 billion's worth of imports that we bought, that came in. Now, if you had to connect that to the chemicals and chemical products and to machinery and equipment, you are sitting with a good 5 billion alone. 5 billion, yeah. Sitting with a good 5 billion alone. Going literally to what services help or sectors help the extractive sector and the mining sector at its core. Food products obviously means everyone eats food. Whether you work in the mining sector, whether you work in the agricultural sector, everyone eats food. the unique scenario is obviously when the trade balance always comes up, because the trade balance, Hamoud, is the distinct thing. For example, like you highlighted in the preface, the preface is basically the executive summary that the statistician general highlighted.
Yeah.
So what is an indicator here, which is also an indicator in the article that we wrote last, was this Monday or last Friday in the Villager? The article was based upon, we are championing local content and local participation and local industry development. And I remember last night even we had that live stream specifically for the agripreneurial activities.
Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah, which is also a similar kind of activity, you know, trying to champion local farm production activities. But a discussion we've not seen take center stage as yet, Helmut, was, for example, things like intellectual property.
Oh, boy.
Things like copyright. Things like inventions, innovations. So far, we see the basic industry taking place. And the unfortunate thing is, Helmut, land is limited. Land is a limitation because it's limited.
Land, just land or arable land?
Any land. You will even be happy, Hamoud, if I gave you a piece of the Namib Desert.
It'll
be cooking hot, I know, and conditions will be unbearable. And
look, I'm black, but I'm not that bad.
It'll be extreme. But you'll be happy. Just to say I've got a piece of land.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, Hamoud. Namibia's population will always grow.
Yeah.
And these are some of the particular questions we also have to ask, that we have to face and also pose to obviously the policymakers is, okay, so in the event of XYZ scenario, let's say all this lovely rain that we've been having here in Windhoek, because Windhoek is a bit of an issue when it comes to sustainable rainfall or regular sustainable rainfall, is what happens if we get the 10-year drought period that we experienced between 2010 and 2020? What happens if we get that again? 10 years. 10 years is a long time, Helmut, of having sub-optimal rainfall conditions. 10 years is so severe that we saw the regular stories of communal farmers losing out in terms of... And they were told, for example, by Meatco at one stage, guys, the rainfall prospects don't look so good. Come and sell your cattle. Get money now so that you can manage your animals and the resource that they depend upon, with the two resources, which is rainfall or actual positive rainfall in your vicinity, which helps with vegetation regrowth, and that you've got drinking water. Because they first lose the drinking water because the rain didn't fall.
Everything basically goes dry.
And then the grazing starts disappearing because there was no rainfall to regenerate for, you know, the grass, the grazing grass to regenerate.
Yeah.
Which then becomes an issue. So, literally, I continuously remember those particular articles, stories, discussions. Persisting drought conditions means someone is not doing something to, or they're not listening to information that is out there for free, or they're not responding to this information in order to curb a potential disaster on their side. And then we end up with a malnutrition conversation that we had the other day. Or that we've had back in 2025.
Yeah.
Because the malnutrition scenario was, there was a way of life versus what is currently the picture that was assessed. The way of life was, they did probably have cattle. Remember, some of the households were in Omaheke, in Karas, and in Kunene. Now, these are areas that have, there's a large portion of people that depend on farming. Oh yeah, in the Tukavango regions. Large portions of the communities and populations in those regions depended on farming. And the farming was agriculture, was animals, not crop. So you ask the question, does this mean people need to be retrained or they need resources to change from animal husbandry to crop cultivation? And there is one negative thing of what happened with crop cultivation. Actually, two, three. But the third one, the Indian one, is not a natural one. Because the first one was the Irish famine, the one where the the potato blight spread because they all practice monoculture.
And you know? They only had like one variety.
Yeah, and the infection, the potato infection spread throughout everyone's plantations.
Yeah.
Because everyone realized, oh, this is such a wonderful crop. This is the crop of the crops, which it technically is. A potato is a very, potato and beans, the legumes, they are pretty good. And yeah, it, so the crops were susceptible to potential crop failures from plant diseases. And when you look at a scenario like what we would be sit with, Helmut, we don't know whether or not we will have the same good rainfall next year again.
Yeah, that's the scary part when it comes to basically any branch of agriculture that you practice, be it animal husbandry or crop farming.
Yeah.
And we are, it's okay now. We are a semi-arid country. We don't have the luxury of having consistent rainfall. So that means we have to adopt, we're basically, you know, forced to adopt our agricultural practices all across the board to the environment we find ourselves in terms of climate. That means if you are doing, take for example animal husbandry, you have to think of it in a way, or more like it's advisable to think of it in a way that instead of just relying on one source of water for your animals, which is rainfall for the most part, the warning that you referenced that came from ITCO towards everyone that that finds themselves in the agricultural, in the business or in the field of agriculture, be it for commercial or subsistence. It's important to basically one, diversify.
Yeah.
Two, I think, the second one is one that is, I think requires more educating to help transition from a traditional way of doing things to a modern way of doing things. I know it was very easy. I think it's very easy to look back at maybe 10, 20, maybe 30, 50, 100 years ago at the way that agriculture, was practiced. It's very easy to say, we are going to have a rainfall again next year. It was the easy back then, but throwing climate change today, it's very unpredictable. So with that unpredictability comes the risk of, you and I as subsistence farmers, for example, of animal husbandry, losing our cattle. So when a warning is given, I think it's advisable to take that warning. And now, if you look at how subsistence farming is done, both in crop farming and animal husbandry, it's not farmed in a way that is self-sustaining. And what I mean by that is, we don't look at this corral that, and basically come up with a mechanism of feeding this animal in a way that it becomes a self-sustaining system, in a way that, take for example, I'm going, every beginning of the year, I look at, I have 50 cattle, and then I'll start doing the math. How much extra feed am I going to need? How much veterinary equipment am I going to need? Yeah. How much fencing equipment am I going to need? Yeah. Now, by totaling it together, what's the monetary value of it? And how many cattle do I sell to buy all this? With all that, out of those 50 cattle that I have, and then I find out that, for me to have, all the veterinary equipment and all the, food equipment and basically everything that, that will help me sustain this, this practice, totals up to, take for example, 20,000-30,000. How many cattle do I have to sell for me to, for me to acquire all that so that I can basically use that to sustain this system? Now, this is where anyone that's that knows someone or basically has subsistence farming, especially with regards to animal husbandry, have received calls from their uncles. I get mine all the time. Send us money every month to sustain the kraal. I'm like, okay, look, just a picture that kraal as a business, and you have to call the bank every month to give you a loan.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that. So, more often.
Because the banks will tell you, okay, depending on the business, Homo.
Yeah.
Depending on the business, for example, my commercial bank, nah, for you, my plus, I'm not going to promote them because I'm not going to mention the name.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone will immediately identify this mechanism that I'm going to mention,
yeah,
that they use. So my commercial bank has something known as a revolving credit plan, RCP.
Okay.
So a revolving credit plan is actual, you apply for your personal loan. Nah?
Yeah.
And the personal loan can continuously be restarted, renewed, without you having continuously to apply for a new
over loan and over again.
Over and over. But they set it at a limit.
Of course, they say but.
They set it at a limit. So you've got to manage yourself.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you give that example in terms of your uncle's uncle,
calling you every month, you know, all three of your uncles have their three different cars, and they're all calling you every month to, you know, to help them with the guy that is looking after their cattle.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have his salary this month.
Yeah. So that becomes problematic because further on, firstly, Hamoud, what you'll immediately identify there is, I'm sorry to say it, but poor financial management.
You don't have to be sorry to say it.
Because the bank will ask you, Hamoud, depending on the limit or the amount,
yeah,
how are you going to pay this back, Hamoud, if this is your income? Are you going to go and hold the gun now to your uncles and tell them, hey, listen, I don't care about your homeboy that has to look after your cattle, but I need some reimbursement for the damage I'm taking. Unfortunately, the economy is transactional. And accountants, Hamoud, they want to know, how are you going to meet what you've extracted just now?
Okay. Take, for example, everyone was classified as a commercial farmer, including everyone that's in communal land. One of the questions that a lot of financial institutions...
That's actually a good thing.
Oh.
The moment you have cattle or you've got any, like a flock or something, a flock of any animal.
Commercial farm.
You're commercially.
Yeah.
You are commercial potential.
Oh boy, you will have to do a lot of agricultural training in terms of basically, again, keeping the system to sustain itself. And what I mean by that is...
You just gave the banks an idea, Hamoud. We need to really write invoices. I'm not making jokes here, dude.
Don't worry, Eagle FM will take care of that.
We need to write some invoices.
Is it even have intellectual property?
If we see that product show up, ne? We see it.
The point is, the reason why I'm saying you will have to conduct a lot of agricultural training is, the traditional way of, animal husbandry type of farming is very different from the modern one, which is mostly associated with commercial agriculture.
Mm.
And, which is, if you go to a commercial, animal husbandry farmer, for example, they have a lot of information pertaining to their farming.
Yeah.
They have, they will tell you how many cattle they have. They will give you the breed. They will give you a specific, reason behind the specific reason why they farm with that specific breed. Because you and I know a breed for cattle, a breed for milk, a cattle breed for milk, is not going to make a very good beef breed.
Yeah.
Yeah. A beef breed is not going to make a very good milk breed. That's one of those classifications we still have to split as in a lot of subsistence animal husbandry farming practices. Because for the most part, we just lump them all together and then cross our fingers and hope they produce both beef, milk, and transport, farming equipment, you name it, all in one.
Yeah.
Now, but if you are talking about commercializing it, you're gonna have to, first of all, if you're going to commercialize, you're going to sell most. Now, selling means you have a target market. If you are that basically gives you an explanation of why you need a specific breed.
Yeah.
Do you want to participate in animal husbandry for meat, which means you need a lot of, you need a beef breed, not a milk one. So if you bring up that idea into a lot of commercial farming areas, especially most parts of the communal land, one thing that you'll find is that a lot of animal husbandry or a lot of cattle farmers, first of all, will will, you know, they will have to learn how to, not learn, basically decide what are they going, what they want to go with. Yeah. Are they going with beef or milk? Because right now, a lot of them, and believe me, I grew up in that environment. You find some of the cattle that just don't produce enough milk. And you start blaming them. Ah, this one doesn't have milk. Dude, it's a different breed.
The cow first has to carry a calf. And when the calf has been born, then you can look at the milk. But then the milk is not even for you. It's for the calf.
Exactly. Now, look, the thing is, this is very funny. And I actually didn't realize how funny it was until I came to realize that if you are going to do, you know, cattle farming, you first have to decide what type of cattle do you want to farm with. And for a lot of us,
the breeds.
Yeah, that's when the breeds comes
in.
If you are into milk, you go for
it. I've known Brahman too long. Yeah. I've known Brahman and Afrikaner for too long. And there's another one, the Hereford. The Hereford is slightly shorter, stocky, but carries a lot of meat on them. The Brahman is the one that we know because it comes out of India.
Yeah.
It's that massive one with the hump.
Yeah.
And then you have the Nguni, which is the most popular across Africa or Southern Africa. Yeah. And then you've got
Built for the arid environment.
Yeah. And then you've got the Afrikaner, which is also slightly built for the African environment, but they've crossbred a lot of the Afrikaner.
Yeah.
The Afrikaner is slightly bigger than the Nguni. They have potential for horns, but the safety concerns, obviously, that many farmers will tell you is, cut the horns off because you don't want your cattle practicing on each other, you know. And I've seen that in Spain, that practice session just looks...
You have never been practiced on by a cow?
Never, Helmut. Why would I be insane, bruh? What did you guys do?
I've been on the receiving end of both kung fu part and the horn part.
Oh, the head butt and the... Yeah. And the let me practice how to bend it like Beckham.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, I'm really sorry. You know, that's why we watch TV, you know, at the Cowboys for doing rodeo. And I was like, who is that insane?
Growing up at the village, you learn how to do all those things from milking, skinning, slaughtering. You go through it the whole nine yards. Now, the thing is, commercialization brings in financial institutions, but the thing is, like you just pointed out, they are going to ask questions of, they have the money, they want to loan you the money, but they want to find out, will you be able to pay it back?
Yeah.
Now, let's look at, you practice, animal husbandry. Excellent. Now, what breed do you farm with? I don't know. are you farming for beef or milk? Or, you know, do you have a special breed that has a special leather that can be used in some high-end textile or more like products like shoes or maybe, you know, handbags or something? I don't know. Like, a lot of I don't know answers which you are most likely going to get from, I think, a good fair of 50 to even, if not 60% of the, of the subsistence farmers in terms of animal husbandry. That will raise a lot of red flags for any financial institution.
Mm.
So.
No, it does, Hamoud. Okay. The financial institutions, this will also a sign primarily of where dependency comes through. If dear listeners, if you're just trying to wonder in terms of also how we are highlighting the dependency discussion also in, if you read the article that was written by our colleague in Amenwa Erastus back on Fridays, I'm now certain about the date, Fridays, the Villager e-paper, it's yesterday, the Monday's one. One of the two. But still, if you look at the dependency discussion that I'm citing, the dependency is, for example, when you look at these trade statistics that we've got here in front of us, which points to predominantly much of the trade activity, Hamoud, is centered around the extractive industry. But then there's an interesting section of this report that we've got. Far, 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 somewhere below, somewhere down there on, what's that page's number? Let me get the page. On page 27 of the report, you find food. No, I don't know, probably it's because I forgot to have lunch. But for some reason, my belly's not talking to me.
Same here.
So there on page 27, the food import-export activity pops up. But the two largest food categories, no, three largest, sorry, that were cited in the report competing with the extractive sector, sector-based activity was beverages, fish, fish in its forms, various forms, and meat products. Oh, sorry, no, it was actually four. It was fish, it was meat, it was beverages, and it was sugars, molasses, and honey, meaning sugar-based products. However, when you get to page 27, basically, of this report, you now see an expansion of the trade activity, specifically in food. Because Namibia is a net... let's rather say it. It's a net importer of food products. Because if you look at where you get most of your food, you get it in most of the retailers across the country. And the retailers are the ones that sit with the agro-processing capabilities in South Africa. Now, they cite here specifically that you've got the products of the milling industry, malt, starches, is that insulin? No, inulin, and wheat gluten products.
I'm still on page 27.
Yeah, I'm still on page 27, specifically there in the top table. So they cite there that for the month of February, fish and its fish related marine or aquatic products, which includes crustaceans, they generated a export volume of 1.3 billion. So yay to the fishing sector. You guys exported 1.3, almost 1.4 billion Namibian dollars worth of product.
Yeah. Let's just hope that but they money exported. Is not disappearing this time.
They exported, Hamo.
Yeah.
This is one of the extractive products that we are also supposed to include into our daily diets. They exported 1.4 billion's worth. If you can't get to meat, Hamo, you should be able to get to fish. If you can't get to fish, you should be able to get to poultry. Do you see how much we are actually spoiled as Namibians for choice? But then go and ask yourself the question, accessibility. How accessible is the product?
That throws the giant fork in the whole thing.
We are spoiled for choice. But where's the accessibility component? Does it matter?
The means of accessing the choice.
Exactly. So there was at one stage, there was a lovely fish shop, Helmut. There was a small enterprise there in Independence Avenue, like 3 years that way, you know, back in time, way back. I popped in there and I could find like the best hake, or not the best, but the best price for hake, you know, hake fillets. And people were buying. And the uncle that opened up the shop, he was so happy because he loved that kind of sales activity because he was like, my goodness.
Who wouldn't?
You know, you've got all these government officials there in the Independence Avenue vicinity or in the Auschwitz vicinity of life who stumbled upon probably a business that has the capability to supply a product at their price range. That business is no longer there.
What happened?
I don't know. It's either they made, you know, they did a legit pump and dump scheme, meaning you show up, you've got product, you sell product, and then you realize, oh my goodness, I can't contain demand. And then you close down. Or supply was bad.
That's ironic.
After trying to maintain or sustain supply, you know, stock levels, you probably supply was bad.
Yeah, because that's why I'm looking at the irony part of it. Because most businesses businesses you'd understand when a business closed, because it wasn't doing well.
Yeah,
but that would be you closing down because you are doing a little too well than you can keep up.
Which I think was the issue.
Well,
now, if we then ask the question about edible nuts, fruits. Peel of citrus fruits and melons, they also did pretty well because they exported at least, was it 96 million worth, Namibian dollars worth of product.
Yeah.
It was a major decrease from what they did in January of this month, of this year. In January, Helmut, they exported actually 535 million Namibian dollars worth
of product.
Go to December.
Yeah, December was 808. So do you see the fluctuations do occur? There are inconsistencies in trade volume. The same that you can even see with the fish products that I highlighted. January, they sold 100 million, 150 million more. No? 57 million more. But then they were literally 400, 500 million less in December of 2025.
Yeah.
When you look at the, what is it, the red meat guys, they sold 241 million for February, but they only supplied 152 million to the export market. And they had the best times of their life from October to December of 2025. They were rocking it from October to December 2025.
Yeah.
I mean, for the red meat production sector, Their best month over a 12-month period was July of last year. 358 million that they exported. Worth of red meat products that they exported. So their best month is almost a year away. Because this is now obviously like 9 or 10 months later that we're looking back in time. But they had some, there is a trend. It ebbs and it flows. It goes ups and it goes down. Now, what many people probably don't speak about trade statistics, Hamid, is another thing that I learned also in sales, specifically in my previous career. There is no such thing as consistent sales volumes.
It's always fluctuating up and down.
It will always fluctuate. You will always pick up the inconsistent, the trend analysis will always be based upon behavior analysis. So what behavior are we talking about? It's usually between the end of a financial year and the start of a new financial year, when budgets have to be closed and when budgets have to be introduced. So there will always be a 3-month period that you will always see in financial planning, from whether you start your own business or whether you're selling something to another business, you will always see these trends. It's similar that you can even apply on a consumer purchasing trends. You will always see the large retailers come up with specials in the middle of the month. Never at the end or the start of a new month.
I've always noticed that.
Always in the middle of the month.
I always say myself, why?
Well, in the middle of the month, they know that they are trying to meet sales volumes, because in certain scenarios, the prices would still be outside of the earnings bracket for some consumers. And so they, in order to help with their stock levels, meaning the stock that's stuck in the warehouse, because the supplier is saying, hey, listen, I have to order more stock. You have to sell the stock that's stuck on your shelves.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned that again, even about cars.
Yeah. So the scenario is that the consumer product retailers and businesses have worked out a method to continuously push products. But that continuous pushing of products reflects in these trade statistics. That means someone is exporting and importing regularly, which highlights to the NSA and to Ministry of Finance, there's continuous economic activity. So it's positives. They see positives. On the ground, you the consumer, you're seeing, yay, specials on the 15th of April. Why? Yay, a special on the 7th of April. Why? Yeah, because they recognize as the retailers, they've got to keep you enticed. They've got to keep you engaged. Come back for more. We'll have specials next week. We've got specials today. We've got specials yesterday. There were specials last year. Specials this month. And specials coming next year.
Yeah, Black Friday is coming up.
It's coming. You've got to stay engaged. There's Easter. There's your mother's birthday. There's Mother's Day. There's your baby mama's birthday. There's your baby mama's Mother's Day celebrations. Yes, I'm going to have to throw that in there. These are realities in Namibia. There's your child's birthday. There's your child's future birthday.
There's your birthday.
That one too.
Yeah.
And even your
there's
car's.
There's your intense birthdays are happening, people.
Don't try and now be gender. What do you call it? Gender
balancing.
Gender balancing the discussion here.
Of course, yeah.
Of course, I still have to see whether or not people are interested in the Ben 10 discussion in Namibia.
No, you'll not find that. That statistic. Who's going to conduct it?
Nobody.
I mean, even if you hired the whole crew to conduct it, who is going to say, you know what, I have five of them.
No woman will say that, dude.
This is the same with my gender. No Ben would just stand there and say, you know what?
Do you know that it was a woman that once asked me, what's a Ben 10, Dwight? I'm like, hey.
No, usually
am I
when
to be the one to share that information.
No, usually when someone asks me that question, I just tell them, please stay innocent.
No. It was primarily Hamel because it was a woman that asked me that question. I was like,
please stay innocent. Stay innocent.
You know, am I the guy? I know, look, I know I talk a lot. I know I read a lot. I know that I look at other information instead of listening to people just yapping their jaws.
Yeah.
I go look for the information to try and verify. What, is what you are saying true or factual, or is it based on fact?
Yeah.
Versus just believing conversations and going, oh, okay, that guy's like, he's like a wonderful person, you know. And then what is a Ben 10?
Yeah. Two things I say is, one, stay innocent. Two, I'm begging you in the name of anything that's holy. Don't Google that.
Why would you then tell them to not Google it, Hamoud, when you know they will Google it?
So it's reverse psychology.
Yes, Hamoud.
So I've been
just say I would not advise you looking it up. Because then they go like, advise? Okay. And then they still look it up. But anyway, yeah. So getting back to the regular consumption trends that take place. Now, obviously what the NSA doesn't cite here is the regular consumption trends. But you and I, we see it when we go to the shop every day.
Mm.
We see there's a special on bread, there's a special on toilet paper, there's a special on a can of Coke, there's a special on a chocolate bar here, there's a special on baby oil, no pun intended. There's a special on deodorant, there's a special on a detergent product. All these specials are there. But what are the large volumes that occupy this report from the NSA? They are industrial trading scenarios. So this means this could be three things, Hamoud. Three things. Just literally one item in each category.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so expensive that it looks big on a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's one item, one unit that's coming into the border, coming in, being imported. But it's such a big unit and it costs X amount of money. Which is the problem with the industrial statistics. Industrial statistics could be like you are importing one diamond.
Oof.
Nah.
Yeah.
Or you are exporting one diamond. Or you are bringing in, let's say it's military equipment. You're bringing in one Navy ship for Namibia's Navy. Nah.
Mm-hmm.
And that ship was paid and bought for. So it has a price tag,
yeah,
a value to it. Because we definitely don't have
shipyard.
Yeah, we don't actually have an actual shipyard because it's actually just a maintenance
thing, not a manufacturing one.
Yeah. So we don't actually have an actual, shipyard, like you said. So money was transferred. The value of the thing has to now cross into national waters. So just that one ship, Hamoud, already would say, poof. Hey, Namibia, you guys bought a ship. This is its value.
Mm-hmm.
And it factors into as, what's this category that I saw here? It factors in as the cars, transport. Wait, where's that category? I saw that category just now. It factors in as the transport or products or whatever category that features here. And then it's a massive amount of money. Just that one ship. One item literally can distort the overall trade statistics category or categories that we measure. But they've got to be measured. Data has to be collected about it. You can't ignore it. You can't disregard it. Money was paid. Delivery is taking place. However, when it comes to the food side of things.
Ugh.
When it comes to the food side of things, this is February still now, Helmut. This is literally when the Crusade of Hormuz kicked off.
sugar and confectionaries. I'm like, oh.
Yeah,
this is February, so no surprise there.
There was probably also a heightened interest in
chocolate
in Valentine's Day activity. I mean, for February, 270 million worth was spent on that. And if you compare that to the February of last year, 2025, 227 million was spent on that.
These numbers are just picking picking into 200 and something in February's. See, February 2026, you have 274 for sugar and confectionery.
Yeah.
Yeah, and February 2025, you have 227. And then it dips to March 2025, you have 160. And April is even worse. Ben, it's
but,
just...
But you can follow the trend of the... of potentially... Okay, what went wrong here? Are we talking about April was a dip because there was too many public holidays? But then May has the most public holidays, 197.
And then it drops, and then it picks
no,
up
in June. It picks up again.
It picks up in June, and July it's through the roof.
Ish, now we've been seeing a lot of chocolates, no?
Yeah.
And sugary products. You guys have issues, guys. There are some, are you giving the health? Are they giving the health sector work here, or what?
No, look, I totally understand. July is midwinter. You've got to be romantic to stay warm. And
February is romantic month. What are we talking about here?
But
that statistics of July 2025.
Yeah.
It's
the highest.
Is
even higher than if both February's of last year and this year.
Well, are people being dumped in July?
No, winter.
No, I'm asking that question.
You have to chocolate your way into someone's bedroom. Okay.
You know, I was trying to keep this as above board as possible, Helmut, but yeah, we can also go with that particular analysis. You know, you got to chocolate your way into a bedroom. I don't know who's.
Okay, but these numbers are interesting. Why are we buying more sugar and confectionery goods in July than we are in February?
I'd also like to know that. Because literally July last year is competing with February this year.
Yeah. But it's even higher than February this year.
And for some reason, it spikes again in October, spiking in November, then it falls flat for December and January. December 2025, January 2026.
No, because, I could have helped the NSA on this one. December, it's confectionery and confectionery sugar are dropping because Namibroary has taken over at this point. And... It's December, man. Who doesn't know that? It's
not people are partying.
No one has time for chocolate.
Okay, so January, this means that the last of the beers are probably rolling out at the end of Jan, the start of the new year.
Yeah.
But even then, they highlighted that there was a 20% increase specifically. You know, obviously they take a whole calendar year comparison between February of last year to February this year.
Yeah.
An interesting thing that pops up then is... the performance for cereals, flour, starch or milk, pastry cooks and products. This particular sector looks weird, Helmut, because it has an 8% growth year on year or month on or month versus month. Because month on month would have meant between January and February. But February 2025, February 2026, that year analysis... the actual growth was only 8.8%.
Yeah.
So this means for serious agro processing, we also have to, since Namibia wants to pursue agro processing in its entirety
mm-hmm.
for from NDP6's particular ambitions, is that we can see that these are products, Helmut, that have long
Jeez, how long?
Shelf lives. Let me say it again.
Yeah.
Has
long
shelf lives. Since you can see this subdued activity of 100 million, 105, 97, 122, 103, 135, the peak here technically was back in July also of last year, the 135,
yeah.
Because February only picks up at 120 versus February 2025, which had 102. Then, animal, vegetable fats, and oils. These are obviously advanced products from animal and vegetable animals and vegetables. So we're talking about oils, cooking oils, animal fats, fats that are used for cooking and other particular scenarios. It was a very small 7.2, also very small single digit growth, 7.2% growth.
That for some reason picked up in December last year.
You could probably say that your analysis also related to beer activity, beer consumption, because this means that people...
There's a lot of...
cooking taking
festivities.
Place. Yeah.
And food, obviously, you know, food is a large part of festivities all across the planet.
And for some reason, I don't know what's up with July. It keeps peaking in July.
Yeah, it keeps peaking in July.
Yeah. For this category, July is not the highest, but July does spike between June and July.
Yeah.
However, the lowest here is the 57 recorded in September. And then, you know, it just comes back steadily down besides, you know, December and November's particular strong performances of 123 and 138 respectively. So, these particular products, Hamut, this is the opportunities that we wish to achieve in Namibia's NDP6, this particular product category. Producing sugar, meaning sugar plantations, is going to be difficult for us.
Our terrain is not built for that.
And we've got very few arable land for that kind of crop.
You'll have to take that to Zambezi.
Yeah, but isn't Zambezi also, didn't Zambezi also have the tobacco plantation on the cards? You remember the planned tobacco plantation? So, because looking at history, tobacco plantations and sugar plantations were literally in the same climates, on the same islands, right next to similar farms in human history. Even though, if you look at the slave trade, it was based upon tobacco and sugar, plantations. Corn or / mealies, that we call it, came a little bit later. But the main particular products were actual sugar and actual tobacco harvesting. So, I mean, sugar would be difficult, Hamut, because it'll only be concentrated in like one or two regions in this country. It'll put a strain on the soil.
Yeah, but it's about finding the food basket. If you look at tobacco. If you look at the location where these plantations, even during the Atlantic slavery, were located, they're mostly in the Caribbean.
Yeah. And in the this east coast of the US.
Yeah.
Because the climates were similar to each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're just looking for the right climate for the specific crop that they want to commercialize on.
Yeah. When it came to another particular edible product that was also in great demand. Beverages. So this could be alcoholic and non-alcoholic. Hamut, I believe Namibia can, or Namibians, we can expand into this bracket.
Beverages?
Well, I won't give away my thinking process right now, but yeah, we can. If I know a guy who buys every Friday and Saturday here at Hoogland Park Cemetery, who produces his own ginger ale. You can call it ginger ale or ginger beer. It still is the same product. It's just a different word that you put at the end of ginger. Mm-hmm. For many people who think that the word beer only implies that it should be alcoholic of nature. No. It's actually, you know, the manner and probably in which it was brewed or produced, or, you know, was there a brewing process? And an ale and a beer is also different products, just so that you guys know. I've drank an actual ale. It is horrible. It is horrible.
I have never.
And you cannot drink it cold. It has to be warm. Room temperature warm. It was horrible. It was a Belgian thing. It was horrible. And it kicked me under the table. Just one bottle. It's like a literal, your single size portion.
Mm-hmm.
And it not, it, you know.
Hey, is that strong?
I thought I, no, it's, you're 5% over, 7% over, and then you find yourself looking at the table from a reverse angle.
All of a sudden you start reading the ingredients on the bottle, huh?
No, I do that regularly, but, you know, you look at yourself wondering, you know, could there, couldn't there have been a better life without this thing that you just consumed? So,
all of a sudden you're going, I am therefore. I think therefore I am. Full philosopher mode.
Let's leave the, what's that guy's name? That French philosopher who said that famous sentence.
Is it Descartes?
Yeah, is it Descartes?
Des what?
Descartes.
Des. Yeah. Descartes.
Or Descartes or something, because they don't say more certain letters in French.
Descartes.
So this was Descartes, who was the
priest. I know that in the rules in the languages, if a T is at the end, they don't pronounce it, which hence the words like buffet and bouquet.
Yeah, and then you go look at Warren Buffett's name.
Oh, yeah, that.
And you go look at the Versailles Palace. That whole name is just Versailles, but the French refuse to say, they refuse to say Versailles. And then you've got the Spanish who rewrite the whole language rules. A V is a B and a double L is a Y. And S is a the.
The Spanish are also like them.
The S and a C pronunciations are the. So yeah, you thought I'm going to have issues.
Oh no.
Go to Spain. You also studied Russian.
My favorite foreign language, they took an N, flip it upside down, and that's the I.
That's Russian?
Yeah. They took an H.
What is the letter that looks like an R again, but it's actually a P?
P is an R.
Yeah.
H is an N.
No, but it's written as a P.
It's literally written like a P. Yeah.
Is an N?
Yeah, H is an N. B is a V.
Yeah.
Y is a U.
the weird U.
Not just your, like you, that like you have it in U in English.
Yeah.
That's not a Y. You know, a Y, like you have a Y in English.
Yeah.
It's not a Y, it's a U. A B.
But they write it as a U.
Yeah, they write it as a U.
Okay. Fun times.
Oh, foreign languages will murder you.
Fun times, and then with Mandarin, it was just about how you pronounce something. You can say can, and can.
You know, with Mandarin, all I've just seen is just, I don't even know what I'm looking at.
No, I'm not talking about the actual calligraphy.
Yeah, like the character, because first of all, you know, one way of looking at a language is I started with alphabets, with Russian. And the alphabets looks very scary, but once you get the, you know, once you master the alphabets, you realize that it's a very phonetic language. Mm. It's not like English. So 90% of the time, you are not going to understand what you are reading, but you can easily read it because it's, again, it's phonetic, unlike English.
When you get to Mandarin, those rules
exactly
fly out the window.
Out through the window. That's
completely Hamun. They fly out the window. That's why I told you.
First of all, you can say
can, and can.
First of all,
these three cans mean completely different things.
I don't know what type of, you know, I don't know if Mandarin even uses alphabets.
No, it does. But the alphabets are the characters. That's why I told you 300,000 characters that you've got to remember.
I only had to deal
for Mandarin. Kanji in Japan has 30,000. No, I'm lying. The 30,000 for Mandarin, 6,000 for kanji.
1,000?
Yeah.
We have what, like 20, so like Trevor says, we have what, like 26 in English, and we still have people going, what comes after Q?
Yes, exactly. So, the unfortunate thing is, when you look at why English and the Western languages are so easy to adopt, it's because of that 26 letter alphabet. Now, who remembers 30,000 or 3,000 characters? Yes, Mandarin is wonderful to try and learn and makes you seem slightly sophisticated. But when you look at, there are three ways to write the word can.
And can the only, as in able.
Can.
Or can as
in
the container.
Item. Or can as in, you know, to try and stop something. Yes, I'm giving you in an English format, three different explanations of the same word. But let me flip the script for you further, Helmut. The deciding factor in Mandarin is a tone. There's one other language in Namibia that has a similar rule. Or language group. Let me rather say language group.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Kwekwe, it's Kwekwekova.
Oh.
They have a rule. The rule is where you place the tone. Now in Kwekwekova is where you place the click. If the click is nga in front on the teeth, you're saying a completely different word in your sentence. If the word is nga, it's a completely different word. If the word is nga, it's a completely different word. Or if the word is nga, no, I already said that one. Nga, no, nga, nga. Yeah, you put more spit behind it.
There's a difference.
Yeah, each click is a different tone. Now that's what Mandarin is. You can go up, down, level, and up and down.
Okay.
Those are the tones. So if you see a tone in Pinyin, Pinyin is the, you know, us, for us Westerners, which is technically us Africans. If you see the word in letters and there are tones, just know, identify the pronunciation through the expression, you get the meaning of what the person is trying to say. So yeah, I'm probably more inclined to also learn Kwekwekova rather and master that versus
Mandarin.
Not just Mandarin, but French or even German, because with German I can just speak Afrikaans with them. Apparently, you know, what you call a cat in the Netherlands is not what we call a cat in Afrikaans. And I don't want to be swearing here inadvertently live on air, which also goes for the buttocks area of the human is apparently different in the Netherlands than it is in German as well. So, yeah, fun times, guys, fun times.
Look, man, the only, you know, one of the thing that I really appreciate the Russian language on is the word expensive. The word, you know, they have the word expensive and the word darling are the same.
Mm.
Daragaya, honey for sweetheart or darling. It's expensive, I mean, which makes sense.
So if you say daragaya, daragaya.
Yeah.
Expensive, darling.
Yeah. But daragaya that would be used by, you know, that'd be using, you know, you'd say that in a reference to a woman. And now you go daragoy if you are talking about in a reference to a man. You know, it's the ending of the sentence that will change most likely
who you are talking to.
Yes, whether you're talking about singular or plural,
yeah,
or whether whether the word that comes after it is you know is feminine, masculine, or neuter. It's also like Spanish and French. Which sense your head spinning, because they have like six different cases of you know, of classifying that. You know which one is the worst that makes a Russian look like a joke?
Mm.
Finnish. Hey.
Isn't that Suomi? They call the language Suomi.
Yeah, I'm told Finnish is a whole different ballgame. Now, coming back to this, to the NSA report on trade. Back now to the Strait of Hormuz, because that's where we are going after this. Because if you look at the way that basically trade is conducted, when you're exporting something, you have to transport it. Mm. Either you're transporting it by road, that's if you are exporting it to Zambia, which we also, you know, we also have a significant market for some of our products in Zambia. And South Africa.
Yeah.
And in the South Africa and China, like you pointed out, they are always like, switching spots in terms of, of the top guys. And I come to find out we have the Omanis and we also have Bahrain.
So it's oil exploration.
Yeah. Now, that brings that complicates our trade considering the current, political atmosphere in that region. Because these are February numbers.
Yeah.
March numbers, or more like a post February 28 numbers going to look like.
It's going to be.
Especially in relations to not just trade in general, because this whole thing has disrupted global trade.
Yeah, to the crusade.
Yeah, because someone thought the best way to open a closed strait is to close it even more.
The latest announcement being that,
you know what? Let's go blockade it again. I'm like, well, what are you doing? What are you doing? What is the guy doing, Helmut?
Well,
so now he's speeding up the famine that I spoke about yesterday,
mm-hmm.
the potential of a famine in India and in other parts of Africa.
Yeah.
He's speeding up the potential of certain particular trade systems collapsing. Because do you know what I saw here in our statistics right here in front of us?
Yeah.
Was we were importing fertilizer through South Africa.
From?
Where South Africa probably buys it from.
Most likely the Middle East.
Probably the Middle East.
Because they have a lot of oil refining
that produces that produces specific fertilizer product.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense.
Once again, we sit with Bonehead of the Month editions coming through from Washington D.C. Yeah, guys, it's a bonehead move. You don't disrupt trade for everyone else if it's a particular key part of the world,
unless you are making
30% of the world's tradable goods.
Unless you are making a lot of money from the disruption, because for one, this whole disruption is sending price of pretty much everything through the roof. And if you are involved in multiple business ventures, obviously you are gaining to some degree from how expensive things are.
The most important thing here is, Hamoud, that these statistics indicate that literally Namibia is accessing more industrial products and goods from Europe, and like you highlighted, from those Omani guys. But now those Omani or Qatari guys won't feature on potentially Marge's statistics. Why? Well, because Iran went and decided to blockade the whole strait, the whole that particular marine channel of trade.
Yeah.
So, like you said, it'll be interesting to see what the impact was of 28 February, because it obviously means 28 February is the end of that Saturday.
Yeah.
All the data collection for February just literally moved on to 1 March, which was the Sunday, and everything closed off, which highlights to everybody. So February looks strong.
Yeah.
It'll definitely look strong.
Yeah.
Because the world was still trying to make sense of what happened on 3 January. The world was trying to move on mm-hmm. from 3 January, which highlighted the triviality of the analysis that we overlooked. What was the triviality that I'm citing? Well, Steve Keen, another particular economist, he's an Australian economist, and I showed him recently to my brother the discussion he had with a guy from A Diary of a CEO. Stephen Bartlett.
Mm.
Now, Stephen Bartlett has nice conversation, but sometimes he walks into a conversation also a little bit naive. For example, he asked Steve Keen, so it's two Stephens, one Stephen interviewing the other Stephen, you know, what is homogeneity? So, Helmut, what can you derive from the word homogeneous?
Similar.
Similar.
Yeah.
Single. Identical. The same. So, Steve Keen highlighted that he cannot understand why mainstream economists, which he calls mainstream economists, continuously trivialize the impact that war has specifically on the oil markets.
Yeah.
And specifically by trivializing that oil is the same everywhere. Helmut, we don't even know what potential oil or what's the oil grade that Namibia is going to produce when the oil is to be pumped in 2034. Yes, we emphasize 2034, guys. We won't say 2034.
It's not happening tomorrow.
It's not happening tomorrow. 2034. That's your earliest, not even your latest. When Namibia's oil potentially gets extracted, what's the difference of that oil going to be versus that Middle Eastern grade? Because the Middle Eastern grade is the one that gives the apparent fertilizer product. That apparently gives the helium that is needed to be made in computer chips.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that, Helmut? South Korea's whole computer chip industry is almost about to fall flat because of helium supply coming out of that neighborhood.
The Middle East.
Yep. That same Strait of Hormuz discussion. South Korea, Taiwan, China will depend on what comes out of that neighborhood.
Helium. What's the industrial application of that? Is it coolant?
Apparently, since it's a gas that doesn't react with any of the other elements, that gives the volatility. For example, we know hydrogen is volatile.
Oh, very.
We know that oxygen has a volatile element to it as well. But helium is a gas that is ideal for computerized production manufacturing.
Because of its inner reactivity component, which makes a lot of sense. Because if you look at hydrogen, it's kind of difficult to place it on the periodic table. But sometimes you find it just hanging
loosely.
And sometimes you find it it's in group one, which makes it, that's where you find, metals like sodium that has to be stored in oil. Otherwise, if you expose it to air, water touches thing and the whole thing goes kaboom.
Is that the mineral that gave rise to Greek fire?
It must be. But,
because Greek fire burns stronger the more water you add.
Sodium, if anything that has sodium catches fire, don't add water. You'll just be making it worse.
So you have to allow it to burn out.
That's one of those metals you're allowed to have. Take for example in your ordinary secondary school science lab, we played a lot with those. And it's a very soft metal. It's stored in oil. You take it out and you can just cut it through with a knife, and then you just a small piece my homies and I took a much bigger piece, put it in a jar, and the whole thing exploded.
You put it in a jar?
Yeah.
Why did you put it in the jar?
There are jars that you find in the science lab.
The major cups and
The beakers and stuff. So you just put water and then you just drop a metal there. Usually, if you just take a small enough piece, it just violently float over the surface until it basically melts off.
Mm.
If you take a bigger piece, then the reaction becomes too violent. The whole thing basically blows up. But if you look at helium is in the last group, just right next to argon.
What happened to the Hindenburg, Helmut?
Helium. For the Hindenburg, they were supposed to use helium, but because of your Austrian painter's foreign policy,
it wasn't his policy.
What? Whose policy?
It was slightly earlier than that. It was because the Americans didn't want to give.
They didn't want to give them helium. They decided they were going to use hydrogen. Hydrogen was like.
And then the Germans went and experimented with hydrogen. But the whole thing of how that happened was the Americans didn't want to sell helium to the Germans. It was an industrial product.
Yeah.
And to make, what was that thing's name? Airships commercially viable.
The early days of aeroplane.
Yeah. To make airships commercially viable, helium was the best and the safest potential gas for long distance travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's light, it's not reactive. So that means even if it starts leaking, it's not going to go kaboom.
Yeah.
And the reason why you find it like on top of argon in group 8 is because if you look at argon's industrial application back then, it was used to fill electric light bulbs. For the very same reason, because the element kept heating to the point where it was blowing up because it was reacting with the surrounding oxygen.
Mm.
So they realized, how can you isolate the oxygen? How can you isolate that element? Put it in a container where it's surrounded by non-reactive gases like oxygen.
Yeah.
So they had this the old electric light bulb where you literally have a bulb, not the LEDs we have today. And then they fill it with oxygen to basically with hydrogen. I'm not now talking about bombs.
Mm.
They fill it with argon and then seal it off so that the element can just blow 700 degrees red and the whole thing won't blow up.
Mm.
So helium is either a coolant or it's something to prevent reactivity between different elements.
Yeah. So it probably features in that particular scenario. So what we see here, Helmut, is potentially we can also look into the future with March, like I highlighted.
Oh.
Because if Steve Keen highlighted in that discussion with the Diary of the CEO's guy, Stephen Bartlett, that specifically the world has 3 months left still of trying to survive, mm-hmm. basically. He noted his own country, Australia, has a month's worth of fuel left in the economy to transport food from the farms to the centers of either commercial activity or production of further agri-processing and the likes. So this is also a particular sketch that Namibia faces. Because, yeah, February looks robust and well. It's end of April that we will see March's statistics. What did March look like? Remember, we're getting end of April, or we're getting in the middle of April, end of February's statistics. So, yeah, March will be not even sobering reading, you know. It won't be even be sobering, but it will be something.
Screaming, crying reading. What's sobering? Oh, wait, did you read the story of that gentleman that set a toilet paper warehouse on fire in the US?
I saw the video.
Yeah.
But it was because he was fired. He reacted because he was fired. No, we're not saying that's how you solve disputes.
No, we have a labor commission for a reason.
Please.
Here's the thing. That is, as soon as that hit TikTok, the conversation on that subject, all over TikTok is, what he did, was that a good way of protesting?
And intentional industrial sabotage? You can also view it like that.
Yeah, but a lot of people are looking at it in reference as a form of protest, which is why, believe me, they are bringing up the Boston Tea Party as a way of not political but corporate protest. And like, okay, this is not going to end well. And this is in the U.S.
Yeah, but how much? Do you remember last year?
That's a good thing.
When the one Chinese guy came out with the farming video about the Americans.
What's that?
The Americans farming. Remember with the trade discussions last year?
Yeah.
The trade deficits and so on. Yeah. And then someone from China made this video of overweight Americans now having to do their own farm work because...
They generated...
You remember that video?
I loved it, I think, yeah.
So that was also a similar thing that sparked a lot of conversation because the same time when the trade deficit surplus conversation or theme that the White House was championing was also that they were deporting so many people that worked in the agricultural sector. Mm-hmm. You know, remember all the farm workers, how many of the people in Florida, Texas, California came and said, but I can't harvest anything because I don't have farm workers. Well, yeah, I mean, I beg to understand, and I really beg to understand. Please help me understand if someone was illegally in your country. That person firstly broke a law to be there. Why are we defending the illegality over commercial enterprise?
I can think of one reason.
Why?
Undocumented people are very easy to exploit.
Which it was. That was a fact. That is also one of the scenarios of what happened in New York.
Yeah.
Remember that the complaints in the city of New York was that the local population of New York doesn't have access to minimum wage, meaning the businesses realize, but why must I pay for an American? You're an American business.
Yeah.
Why must I pay for an American teenager, 16-year-old, mm-hmm. who will ask for a higher rate per hour, who is actually entitled to a higher rate per hour
by law,
versus an illegal immigrant, whom I can pay whatever I want.
Yeah, I can decide not to pay them. Why are they going to report? Because if they go to the police, they will be handing themselves over.
Yeah, and then the police will hand them over to immigration.
Yeah.
So there was a system of exploitation taking place, which first and foremost, a country that tries to champion human rights, democracy, and other particular themes, it looked a bit weird because it did look weird. Okay. The one about the 500, medical facilities in one building. Yeah, that was another level. The one in Minnesota, where the guy with his GoPro showed up and said, Can I, what's your medical rates here, please? I'd like healthcare. And then the Somali lady just, she says with something that was not English, and then she closes the door on the guy. Have you seen that video?
I don't think I've seen that.
So that brings out another question. Now, I know, guys, we were talking about the United States within Namibia's trade statistics, but things are linked. The conversation here is, Helmut, things are not going to look up between what happened this past weekend. Apparently, J.D. Vance was just there for 16 hours in Islamabad. The Iranian said, nah, Egnani. And then he had to get back after, he had to get back on the plane after 16 hours of just hot air and wasting his time in Islamabad. And now we've got a new blockade on a blockade that was imposed by the aggrievers, the guys who are, who have the major grievance in the blockade.
Yeah, and also, by the way, Donald Trump and the Pope are,
yeah, it's a news bad.
Yeah, like,
oh, I found my new patron saint. Okay, ask Catholics that if we, the moment we go through, what's the thing's name? Confirmation. You have to select your own saint.
Like
the
patron saint?
Yeah, like your, the saint that you feel more affinity to. At one stage I thought about, Joan of Arc, but then I was like, but I'm not in a war scene. Just because I was a 15-year-old who I liked war. And then the movie by Mila Jovovich came out and was out back in that year of 2001, or was it 2000, where she played Joan of Arc. And I was like, ah, okay, no. I think my mom selected me St. Augustine. But St. Augustine is an African, specifically an Algerian. He was a North African. Guess what he's the patron saint of? The three particular industries. One is, he's the patron saint of brewers.
Patron saint of what?
Brewers. Brewing. He's also the patron saint of printers. So I'm already qualifying two.
Messengers.
And then the last one is the patron saint of theologians. You know, France's particular previous calling. Sorry, France. We know that, you know, you've got special pastoral or pastor-like tendencies, but yeah.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't recommend the last one, you know.
I'm from a pastor, from a family of pastors, believe me.
Okay, Hamut, you get special exceptions.
Yeah, I'm the one that, you know, just decided, you know what? I mean, you preached, goodbye. I'm going to politics. Now, I think they say one aspect for countries like Namibia and any other country that basically has a large trading volume with China and South Africa, especially, which is that's the category we find ourselves in. There's a whole different way of looking at this whole Strait of Hormuz, you know, thing. Take, for example, if you go to the conclusion part, which is on page 3 of that document. The second paragraph says, South Africa maintained its position as the country's largest export destination with a share of 37.8% of all goods exported.
Yeah.
Followed by Zambia with a share of 15.2%. Furthermore, now, China, Spain, and the UAE formed a part of Namibia's top 5 export markets. Additionally, South Africa maintained its position as the country's largest source for imports, accounting for 36.7% of total imports into Namibia, followed by China at 10.9%. Now, obviously, you have a lot of goods moving in between Namibia, Namibia and South Africa, China and South Africa. And it goes into followed by China with 10.9% of the market share, and Zambia, Bahrain, and Oman were among the country's top 5 imports too. But I want us to focus on China, and there's a reason why this is very important when it comes to the whole Middle East. And now, from the 3rd of January, a lot of experts that were basically looking at why the Trump administration did what they did in Venezuela, and now. You're looking at one thing here. Who is who are you trying to basically compete with? Who is the US main competitor economically? China.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, obviously, the best way, now, every time that you, you know, you disrupt an economic atmosphere of one of China's trading partner, you are slowly, basically showing that you don't want the, you know, you don't want China being your competitor.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's the same thing, you know, that's the same thing that that's the same conclusion that was drawn on Venezuela, and that's the same conclusion that can be drawn on Iran.
Yeah.
When you think of it this way, you totally understand why Netanyahu and Trump are homies on this discussion, because Netanyahu gets to get his war that he's been singing about for the past 30 years. Iran has nuclear weapons. And he's been saying that for up to 20, 30 years. Two weeks away from the 90s. So, Netanyahu gets to get his war.
Yeah.
And Trump gets to, take out his competitor, which in a long run is China.
Yep.
Not Venezuela, not Iran. Now, while China happens to be our major trading partner, that means every blow that is dealt on the Chinese economy, there's a domino effect that cascades to all of China's trading partner, which, by the way, includes the U.S., because much of the U.S. Pharmaceutical industry heavily relies on China. Now, I don't know why I would fight someone who's, who dominates the pharmaceutical industry of which I make a lot of money from, because the U.S. healthcare is one of, if not the most expensive.
There is an actual very good point, Amut, that supports that particular thinking that you're outlining there. It's when I discovered, I was actually told by someone else to read this particular article that the Reuters news agency or the research foundation, they went and looked up where did COVID-19 conspiracy actually come from? The anti-vaccination conspiracies that were found across the internet. And they discovered that it was primarily the what's the thing's name? It came from, it was something manufactured by the CIA in the United States. So they discovered, what was the basis behind this? The whole idea was to sow discontent, misinformation and disinformation, and chaos in the thinking of internet users, specifically on social media and the likes, to just basically say that the Chinese vaccine and the Russian vaccines that came out before the American variants came out is bad for you. But then it cascaded into everyone thinking that any kind of vaccine is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads then to the doubt that was sown. There were debates. There were people throwing arguments. And there was the one major thing about the Russian vaccine Sputnik.
Yeah.
Where it came about where the South African, I remember that report that ENCA South Africa did. Is it true that Sputnik exposes especially homosexual men to contracting HIV a lot quicker?
Jesus.
That was a literal thing. And then people were like, nah, what is this particular product? And literally that was the discussion that came about when you asked people, would you go for the Russian variant Sputnik?
Yeah.
Because Sputnik was available in Namibia. Sinopharm was first, the Chinese one. Then came Sputnik. And then we got the Indian donation of what I took, which was AstraZeneca. But it came under a different name. It wasn't... The thing, the product is actual AstraZeneca, but the lab in India that produced it had put its name on the thing, which was COVAX, the COVAX vaccination. So Reuters discovered, then came out with an article in 2024 highlighting that, it seems that it was the American intelligence agencies. And who unfortunately in 2020 and in 2021, whose CIA director was in charge at that time? Yes, Donald Trump's own CIA director, the guy who said they were, who was planning to take out Julian Assange and Edward Snowden. That particular guy. So, You now get to understand, Hamoud, there is one bad faith actor continuously in global trade trying to subvert global trade. Just yesterday we talked of, I highlighted that globalization is a product of the UN. Technically, it's the product of what we've now seen, this unipolar world that is now being shredded apart into a multipolar world.
Yeah.
But it helped the unipolar world. Globalization helped the unipolar world because it helped countries like China to actually become the world's factory, because the where the petrodollar was flowing out from, specifically through the Middle East into Wall Street and into Europe, was a scenario of these two spheres of the West have to become consumers for the rest of us. So Namibia has to produce for Europe. Namibia has to produce for America. Namibia has to produce for Ireland. Has to produce for Canada. But Namibia cannot ask on Canada to produce for it. Namibia cannot ask Australia to produce for it.
Yeah.
Because Namibia is not in that kind of relationship. And that's why the discussion of the trade deficits and the trade surplus the scenarios didn't make sense last year. When we were laughing at poor Lesotho getting 45% tariffs slapped on it.
Yeah.
Because what can poor Lesotho grow or produce, Helmut, to try and...
A market lab.
And how can Lesotho be a market for the US? In what consideration? Lesotho is the size of someone's backyard. What did Donald Trump expect? And even Cambodia. And Cambodia doesn't have a good relation. It doesn't have, you know, the strongest relations. Not that they care about relations with the US, potentially. But it doesn't mean that their historical relations have been at the best, because Cambodia, unfortunately, Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam, unfortunately, suffered the biggest, most negative statistic in the world to date. More bombs were dropped there by the United States than through the whole Second World War, guys. More bombs were dropped there than through the whole Second World War in Cambodia and in Vietnam.
Laos.
And Laos also. Yeah, factor Laos in. But Cambodia was most the biggest sufferer of these bombings, because the theory was that the Americans had was that the Viet Cong was moving out from, was taking shelter in Cambodia, and then they come and attack in Vietnam. But the downside was, is that the Viet Cong was hiding between the villages. The Viet Cong were the locals around the Americans.
Like, okay, first of all, they had their own villages underground.
Not just
that's
that,
how good those guys are.
Not just that, Hamoud. Vietnam was split into two.
Yeah.
So what the Americans came through, which was a scenario which the French had experienced, was the French was trying to stop the North Vietnamese, which was technically communists.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the North Vietnamese were the product of the Viet Cong. The Viet Cong was in war with South Vietnam. But South Vietnam was too politically too weak to try and literally defend itself. So the French asked the Americans, please come and help the South Vietnamese. And then the French withdrew out of the three countries of Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. Then they withdrew. Then the Americans went, like Jiang Xuejin explains it, they went mission creep. They didn't have to justify it to the Congress in the US. They didn't have to go and promote it to the American public.
Yeah.
They just went, yeah, we've got 100 military advisors in Vietnam. Next year, it's 5,000 consultants.
Yeah.
The year after that, we've got 20,000 special advisors in Vietnam. And then later on, it was a full-blown war that the American public found.
I had no idea about.
And then that was over a span of 6 years. Then they realized we're in a war.
Like, okay, you have to understand that, the situation in Vietnam was so bad, the soldiers basically started to, came up with the whole fragging idea. Yeah, I mean, they were just tossing grenades, in the tents of their own, high-ups, if they pushed them a little too far.
Mm.
So they just wanted to go home. And Hanoi Hana was not helping the situation.
Why did you have to bring her up? But she was doing her job.
Oh, yeah, she was. Look, which was a very amazing psychological warfare.
Yeah.
Because for one, she was telling them the truth. Their government, your government is lying to you because now this is the government that's waging war on halfway around across the world. And at home, they are telling people, no, it's just, we're still in diplomacy. A lot of people just woke up one day and realized, oh my God, we are at war.
And for some reason, the children are coming back with legs blown off.
Yeah.
Suffering from severe PTSD and all those kinds of things. And then people were asking, so what are you guys doing in Vietnam? No, we're actually fighting the North Vietnamese.
Like, since when?
Oh, since 5 years ago.
What now? Look, the Hanoi Hana strategy. Oh boy, that did. Look, she was telling them the truth. You are going to die here. GI.
Mm.
Yeah, and your wife will marry another man. Good luck being strong after being told that when you're at the front line.
Yep. I mean, it's a harsh reality, but it's a reality.
It's a reality, a very painful one.
It's a very painful one. And the downside also has been, Hamoud, that when we obviously look at the current climate of things, like I said a little bit earlier, March's statistics will look weird.
Yep.
And you will hear a different tone being positioned by the statistician general in that preface, that summary he gave, that you extracted a sentence from.
Yeah.
He'll highlight to you, things are not going to be easy.
Not good, not good.
No, it's not good.
Yeah.
And if you hear specifically scenarios where economists are telling the world, well, the world has three months until we start hitting famines. And then you have to start asking questions about, okay, what's Namibia's fate going to be in this?
Yeah.
Do we have an agricultural sector that is exposed greatly because of the fertilizer we need?
Yeah.
Does the fertilizer coming through South Africa come from Hormuz, the neighborhood of Hormuz? Or is it a different supplier?
Also look at it from a supply chain standpoint. Even if South Africa manufactures it, you have to ask yourself, where do they get where do they get all their ingredients?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And all the material that's needed to put together this final product.
Yeah.
Because it's impossible for them to manufacture all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why while Boeing and, Airbus decided to sanction Russia on everything except for the Titanium. Like, you know what? We're just going to sanction it, but for the Titanium.
We are angry with you.
We are so angry, but keep the Titanium coming.
Up to this point.
Yeah.
Please.
And the French were like, and the uranium, please.
Well, the uranium was actually a non-explainer, Ahmed, because when they explained, when I was there in Russia, where the boss of Rosatom literally says, well, you know, they can't sanction us because we don't export uranium. We've stockpiled for whatever amount of years. I was like, okay. Which also highlighted when we had the discussion about the standing committee that went to Omaheke.
Yeah.
The theory that was positioned in there about, uranium being taken from somewhere else to be brought here to contaminate the underground.
Yeah,
water.
Like this uranium is already here. No one is bringing it from somewhere.
Meaning it was a stupid principle from the beginning, Ahmed.
Yeah.
Meaning the whole basis of the lobbying is from a stupid principle. After you were eating $1 billion.
You know, one thing that I'm understanding from that extrapolation of how all this, Venezuela and Iran all adds into indirectly or more like a long-term plan to basically hurt China.
Mm.
It's because it's and this is just my own personal pattern putting together.
Yeah.
France is part of the EU. It's a significant part of the EU market, both in export and import. And they get most of their energy from nuclear. Mm-hmm. And that requires a lot of uranium. Where do they get most of their uranium? Most of it came from the parts of Niger and Burkina Faso.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were Russia, what would you do?
you'll supply to France?
Find your homie who is in Niger and Burkina Faso and tell them to basically ruin that relationship with France. And basically making it somewhat very difficult for them to, you know, just, you may not completely obliterate it, but just make it difficult for them to put their hands on uranium. Because now all those uranium, you know, all that uranium market that they, you know, a lot of French companies are basically running, the French energy market had access to, like, basically, on a blank check, in, out of Niger and Burkina Faso. Mm. They're kind of difficult considering the leadership that's in place right now.
But here's the scenario. What did the French do? Now the French are looking to other African countries to source uranium from. So
changing a vendor.
Yeah. Changing that's what they're doing. They're changing vendors. I mean, the French can just as well buy directly from the Chinese. And the Chinese would say, hey, thank you. Because after the Chinese vice president went to Davos at the start of the year, remember that what the guy said? Guys, I know we make everything in China. But you know what? We can still work together. And that was his pitch. He literally said, we can still work together if you buy from us.
And that's the bad guy. Seriously?
Why is he the bad guy if he's willing to do business?
Yeah, he's just selling you stuff. He's not bombing the democracy into you.
It's not his problem. You can't manage economies of scale. That's Africa's issue, Helmut. Once we come back to the discussion, why don't we have smartphones made on Africa by Africans?
Because the African Union headquarters was donated. If you are married and someone and another man is donating you a house, food, and everything, don't ask what's happening to your wife.
If you are marrying and your wife's wedding dress is donated,
yeah.
If you are marrying and the catering is donated,
uh huh. Perhaps you shouldn't be getting married.
Not just the marriage thing. Perhaps you probably shouldn't be angry when you said yes, 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 yes all the way. Until the altar and you realize, who paid for what here?
Yeah, then you find out the firstborn...
Even the wedding ring is donated.
The firstborn comes out looking like the donor and you're like,
colonization. We take a quick live read. We take a quick live read before we continue with the rest or we end with this discussion today, dear listeners. Davidson University for the 2026 applications that are now open for the July applications that are currently open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Admission requirements indicate that candidates must have a recognized nursing qualification at Level 7, NQF Level 7, or higher from any recognized higher learning institution. Candidates must also be a registered nurse or midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia or the HPCNA. Candidates must also have a minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse or midwife in any health facility, and a candidate must write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing the postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration is 1 year. Mode of delivery is full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406, Velvetia University, where everyone is an achiever. So, yeah.
Don't get married.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, today you can't get married, Helmut.
Standard
of living is going to be a nightmare. But the food basket discussion, which speaks to a partiality of the standard of living scenario, is an incomplete picture. I say this primarily because I now see that having oil in your country is not good.
I don't think oil is the problem.
No, no, no.
The oil thieves are the problem.
No, 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 no. The invasion force from a super carrier known as the Gerald Ford is a problem.
Now, look, again, I will keep taking us back to the China's 100 years of humiliation.
Yeah.
One thing the Chinese learned, if, you know, at least from my conclusion, is after they went through that period, after being forced to sign one-sided treaty after another,
yeah,
and they ended up losing Hong Kong, the Chinese learned one thing.
They lost Hong Kong, Macau.
The whole discussion around Taiwan.
There was another territory. I think it was Taiwan, but there was another territory as well.
Yeah.
Which I think was these guys. They were the French. Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. those guys must border onto China.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it was also them
now,
that they suffered from.
The reason, one thing that I think, this is not from the Chinese, one thing I think the Chinese learned from that is, you need defense.
Yeah.
Like, there are no two ways, there is no walk around. You need to invest in your defense. Now, for a country that does not have near as much resources as the African continent, learned that the best way to keep your people and your resources safe is build your own defense. Spend in your own defense. The Chinese did that because they realized that diplomacy can only take you so far. And we learned that, this is something that was 80 years later was pointed out by the Canadian Prime Minister.
Which is also a downside because the only actual country making hardware, producing hardware, is South Africa.
Like, look, for Africa, Africa's lack of investment in, first of all, a lack of, cohesion on how to do things, be it trade, diplomatic relations and stuff, and this is all across the continent. That is leading to, institutions like the Institute of Security Study asking questions like, with all the foreign military installations on the continent, just how safe do you think you are? And that's coming from 2021. Now that we are seeing what's going on in the Middle East and all the military, installation now, which were put in place to keep those countries like the UAE, the Omani, the Qatari, to keep them safe, are basically doing the opposite of that.
Mm.
Now, at this point, if you ask me, I think they are going, oh my God, we should have invested in our own defense.
Yeah.
They outsourced the defense. They are paying the price for that. So, if you ask me, again, China came up with a brilliant idea. Have your own defense. Mm. And the defense for the entire continent is something that Africa have heavily outsourced.
We still do.
Yeah.
We still do.
So that means one thing that we can easily learn from what's going on in the Middle East, especially with regards to the war with Iran, by the US and Israel, is that defense is not something you can outsource. You cannot outsource defense and survive. They outsource that. They're paying the price.
Mm.
And we still have it heavily outsourced. I think we are going to learn one thing from this.
We're even outsourcing shipping, Helmut.
We outsource everything.
How can Greece be one of the world's largest shipping countries? Greece, Helmut.
Yeah.
Greece. The only thing that Greece can contribute to the world is shipping and ancient Greeks.
Philosophy.
Yeah. So, there is, besides being known for diamonds and uranium, Namibia has the potential to also reach new heights. The new heights obviously are problematic because we are fixated on oil.
Yeah, unfortunately.
We are fixated on oil. And for some reason, we have to move away from this oil discussion. The sooner the better.
Not just that, the whole, the extractive industry is Africa's blessing and curse.
At the same time.
Which
is also its own Dutch curse.
Very much its own Dutch curse. But, the thing is, if you look at defense, for example, China went all in that one. Because if you look at the supply chain of everything electronics, China is popping up everywhere.
Mm.
All across the supply chain. That's not by accident.
Mm.
That's basically them looking at how global manufacturing works. Yeah, they basically looked at how global manufacturing works. And they decided to position themselves in a place where they have, in the events of negotiations, they have a lot of leverage in that negotiation. You can't walk in the global negotiation with your hands in your pocket. Because every time a negotiation with a bigger country fails, what happens? They just make a phone call to, just keep bombing.
Mm.
And that's exactly what they do. And we're witnessing that right now. And we decided of all things that we could have outsourced as a continent, security. With all respect to the Afro-US relationship in terms of defense, the headquarter is in Germany.
And with all respect to also understood potentially saying that security is a very key thing, Helmut, Africa's biggest problem is that we've got problems with each other.
Oh, yeah, there is that.
So even if your economy was now manufacturing its own particular military hardware, the concern would have been that the next guy would be jealous of you producing a military hardware.
Yep.
And then comes and invades you. Because you are going to invade him because you were producing new tanks and new guns and stuff like that. And this is also part of the things that I still don't understand about the African military landscape. Is that you're not allowed to manufacture a gun helmet in Namibia. You can't.
Hence my point of the whole continent, not just Namibia, of outsourcing their own defense.
Yeah.
And that's one heck. Now, if you outsource, with all due respect to all Pan-Africanists, of, you know what, let's just nationalize all our natural resources and take it all ourselves. First of all, if you did that.
To where?
That's the question. Where are you going to take it? That's question number one. Where's the market? Because believe me, the guys that you'll be kicking out will make it a nightmare for you to access any market. That's one. Mm. Two, rebels will be popping up left, right, and center.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, when you'll ask yourself, who is arming these guys? You'll find out that the very same guys you kicked out of your country are the ones that are arming the guys that are now causing chaos in the environment. And that's the same thing. Saddam was helped to topple by the U.S. to topple his predecessor.
Mm.
Saddam was in line. As soon as Saddam got out of line, all of a sudden he had nuclear or weapons of mass destruction. What happened in 2003? The toppling of Saddam. Now, the world of politics, negotiation is the official conversation.
Yeah.
The main conversation has to do with mostly, number one, intelligence and military. Intelligence means a lot of information, most of which you steal from each other.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And you have a lot of things happening in the background.
Yep.
Which people don't have to see.
Yeah. Or just go on the line and Google the word, the thing.
What about the thing?
It was an emblem that was gifted by the Soviets to the American embassy. It was a microphone. Look, global politics is ugly. You can't make it nice. All right, until tomorrow, same
time. That's obvious, man. On that note, guys, let's see each other again, same time, same place. And stay tuned for the next program after the break.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.